Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lord Blackwell's Promise by Ashton Newbold, narrated by Christine Rendell. Chapter 1. If Margaret was to properly maintain her hatred toward the Earl of Blackwell, then it was of the utmost importance that she only listen selectively at church. She crossed her ankles beneath the pew before crossing her arms in a similar fashion. The vicar had been prattling on about how to love thine enemy for at least 20 minutes, and she had endured quite enough. Letting her eyes drift closed, she drew a deep breath. The humid summer air did little to soothe the hot anger that festered in her chest.
"Are you unwell?"
Mamma's voice was a soft whisper. Margaret opened her eyes, giving a quick shake of her head in her mother's direction, before focusing on the vicar again. Perhaps it was age, or experience, or simply a matter of having a better heart than the one Margaret had. But Mamma somehow managed to endure her hardships without despising the man who had caused them. Could Margaret even call Lord Blackwell a man? She bit her lip as her eyes narrowed. No, he was a snake, a vicious, ugly snake. She didn't think of him often. She tried not to. But when the word enemy was being echoed repeatedly through the church, she couldn't help it. He was arrogant and cruel and wealthy beyond reason. Margaret's parents were humble, kind, and yet they were poor beyond reason. How was that fair? How had the man who cheated her father out of his fortune been blessed with such good fortune himself? She glanced down the pew at her father, who was listening intently to the sermon, and her three younger brothers, who were taking turns pinching one another's hands as hard as they could. All three boys laughed quietly, despite the red marks appearing on the backs of their hands. Their trousers were too short, with holes forming in the knees. The thread on Mama's sleeves had begun to unravel. Papa's jacket was missing two buttons.
"As you see, that is why we must love our enemies."
The vicar's melodious voice came back to her attention.
"That is why we must forgive all those who trespass against us."
He opened his Bible.
"Ye have heard that it hath been said, Thou shalt love thy neighbour and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you..."
Margaret cleared her throat a little too loudly. She preferred to stop reading after that first part. When the congregation was excused, she stood and threaded her way through the crowd and out the door. The scent of wildflowers flooded her nose. While she waited for her family to reach her, she tipped her head up toward the sky so the sunlight could warm her face beneath her bonnet. Pain shot up her arm, and she jerked her hand away from Philip's tiny fingers. She gasped, turning toward her youngest brother with a scolding frown.
"You mustn't allow George and James to teach you that pinching is acceptable."
She lowered her voice to a whisper,
"especially at church."
For a moment, Philip looked truly remorseful, staring down at his fingers with a scowl. Margaret tousled his ginger curls, drawing his gaze back up to hers.
"That only applies to your sister, of course. You may pinch your brothers as much as you would like."
She winked, and a smile tugged at Philip's lips. He raced off to find George and James, who were already on their way down the hill toward their cottage. Mamma linked her arm through Margaret's as she stepped up beside her.
"What a lovely day! The heat of summer shall be upon us soon."
"How are the crops?" Margaret asked in a low voice. "Has there been any improvement?"
She knew not to ask such questions in front of Papa because of the worry it caused him, but Mamma always spoke with a hopeful tone. Today, however, Mamma's blue eyes darkened.
"I'm Afraid not. Her lips pressed together, and she looked down at the grass as they walked. Her pale lashes shielded her eyes from view, but Margaret had already seen the worry within them. Papa was still conversing with one of their neighbours near the doors of the church, and even from the distance, Margaret noted the slump of his shoulders, as if two boulders were resting atop them. Not only that, but he was ill. If he hadn't been so intent on going to church, he should have been at home in bed with a cup of warm broth. His skin had turned pale, and his eyes were bloodshot from all his coughing and poor sleep. Margaret's jaw tightened as she watched her brothers running down the hill with their torn trousers nearly halfway up their calves. If they couldn't even afford new trousers for the boys, then how would they afford to eat through the winter? Her heart thudded a shallow rhythm in her chest. She should not have left her position as a lady's maid, not even for a brief visit to her family. They needed as much money as they could possibly earn. "I will continue my search for a governess position," Margaret said. "Surely there is a family who won't know of Papa's reputation." Mama gave a weak nod. Being a governess was a more respectable position than a maid. Shortly after her family's fall from society, which had been caused entirely by that odious earl, Margaret had been fortunate to have been given a position with the Northcott family at Larkhall. But soon, they had no longer needed her. The master of Larkhall, Matthew Northcott, had been beyond generous in helping her find work as a lady's maid afterward. But when she had heard of her father's declining health, she came home immediately to help her mother care for him and her three brothers. In truth, she felt rather helpless, no matter where she was. As a maid, she hardly brought in enough money to significantly help her family with their needs. And being so far away, she could hardly eat or sleep because of her worry over her family. The worst of it was, her family had nothing if not their pride. The Northcotts had offered to help support them financially, but her parents had always refused. Margaret had too. It bruised her to the core to be so dependent on others. It hadn't always been that way. As she walked arm in arm with Mama, she could recall many similar instances, but they had been walking into a ballroom instead. They had both been dressed in fine gowns. Mama had been smiling, proud to be the chaperone of such a refined daughter. Papa often blamed himself for all they had lost. He had made the foolish decision to gamble their fortune on a business scheme involving Lord Blackwell. But it hadn't been his fault that the Earl had planned to steal it all from the beginning. It hadn't been Papa's fault that Lord Blackwell had protected himself from scrutiny by proceeding to accuse Papa of cheating in a game of cards, publicly disgracing him, even after he had taken nearly every last penny from his pocket. "Margaret, your cheeks are turning red," Mama said with a scolding tone. Margaret gave a frustrated sigh. Simply because Mama chose to be forgiving and submissive didn't mean Margaret had to. When they had so little, she couldn't bring herself to let go of her resentment. It wasn't only toward Blackwell, but toward the world itself. How could so much unfairness exist without consequence? How could such a wicked man be thriving in his enormous estate? She could envision him now, sitting at the head of the long dining table, feasting on an assortment of meats and breads and desserts, counting the crystals on the chandelier. Well, she couldn't entirely envision him. She had only seen him once, fleetingly, when he had been leaving a meeting with Papa in his study. He was young, she knew that much. Handsome, according to the ridiculous opinions of ignorant young women. But if a man's soul was not also handsome, then his face was simply a dangerous mask. Mama raised a hand to shield her eyes from the sun. Her posture stiffened.
What is George doing?
Margaret followed her gaze down the hill to where a large willow tree leaned over a pond. As she squinted, George, the eldest of her three brothers, came into view amid the branches, balancing near the top of the tree. James and Philip stood at the bottom, watching their brother as he took a step closer to the edge of the limb. His head was tipped down toward the pond. Margaret's blood froze. Was he going to jump? Panic gripped her muscles. Her brothers didn't know how shallow that murky pond was. It was no more than 2 feet deep. She could easily imagine George complaining of the heat of the day and concocting the horrible idea of jumping into the pond to cool off. But from the top of the tree, he would hurt himself. Margaret groaned, tugging her arm away from Mama's and running down the hill. George, she shouted, waving her arms in an attempt to draw his attention. Stop! Philip and James turned at the sound of her voice. George looked up, and the moment he saw her, he stumbled, bending over to catch himself. Margaret froze, her heart sinking when she heard the crack of the branch. George fell backward, flailing for what felt like an eternity, before landing with a shallow splash in the pond.
George!
Margaret's chest squeezed with dread as she raced toward the water's edge. To her relief, George's head came up from the water. Not a second later, he let out a soul-shattering scream. She charged into the murk, her boots immediately filling with mud and rocks. Her skirts weighed her down as she trudged closer to George. Sitting on the bottom of the pond as he was, George's face was nearly submerged as he cried, coughing between breaths. When Margaret reached him, she could feel the jagged rocks under her soles.
I'm here,
she said in as gentle a voice as she could manage.
Tell me, what is hurting?
She squatted down in the water, tucking her arms under his shoulders to raise him higher. He let out another scream.
Is it your leg?
He trembled with a sob and nodded.
And my arm.
His voice melted into another chorus of sobs. Margaret glanced back at the edge of the pond. It was so far away. She didn't trust herself to carry him out without tripping over her skirts or the rocks.
I need you to float on your back. I'll help you.
If she could manage to bring him closer to the edge, then Mama could help pull him out safely. George gave a weak nod as she slipped her arms under his back, lifting him to the surface. He whimpered at the movement. His leg floated up first. Her stomach lurched. She took a deep breath to calm herself. Not only was his leg broken, but it was broken through the skin. It could not have possibly been healthy to have an open wound in such dirty water. He needed to be out of the pond at once. She managed to compose herself enough to focus on his face.
Look up at the sky, Margaret said in a quick voice. What do you see in the clouds? Do you see the rabbit?
She didn't actually see a cloud shaped like a rabbit, but it would keep him searching. If he saw his leg, he would panic and sink. His arms floated up and she assessed the damage. His right forearm appeared to be broken and bruised, the curvature far from normal. She kept her hands firmly under his back, walking as quickly as she could toward the bank. Mama was standing there now, both hands covering her mouth. She started stepping toward the water.
Mama, go fetch the physician.
Margaret kept her voice even, though her heart was pounding hard in her ears. She could hardly hear herself.
I don't see a rabbit,
George whined between sobs.
It's right there.
Margaret pointed upward in a random direction, biting her lip as she rotated him in the water until his head was facing the edge of the pond. She shuffled behind him, keeping her hands under his shoulders as she stepped onto the grass. She glanced behind her.
"James, Philip, go home and wait for us there."
The two boys were watching, eyes rounder than saucers. She didn't know whether they had seen his leg yet or not, but she hoped to prevent such a thing if possible. They exchanged a glance before starting back up the hill, walking backward so as to still observe the situation.
"Quickly,"
Margaret said in an exasperated voice. Her breath came fast, her hands shaking with nervousness. The two boys took off faster.
"Keep your eyes on me," Margaret said from above George's face. "I'm going to pull you out of the pond."
She could see the blood from his leg swirling amid the murky water. Tucking her arms under his shoulders, she rocked back on her feet.
"One, two, three."
She leaned back and dragged him as carefully as she could onto the grass, angling his body toward the left side to avoid further injury to his right leg and arm. She fell backward, landing hard on her backside on the soggy grass. His crying continued, and he craned his neck upward as if to sneak a glance at his leg.
"George!"
Margaret took his face between her hands, hovering above him.
"You did so well floating on your back. Do you remember when Papa taught you to swim? Do you remember that big, deep pond by our house?"
Her heart ached at the wistful gleam in George's bright blue eyes. Even at the age of 9, he remembered clearly their old house, the manor that Papa had been forced to sell. She smoothed the wet strands of blonde hair from George's forehead. For the first time, she was grateful that the seams of her dress were already tearing. She took hold of one layer of her skirts and tore it from the waistband, draping the large piece of fabric over his leg to hide it from his view. She didn't know the best way to stop the bleeding, so she prayed that the physician would arrive soon. Chills erupted over her arms as a breeze took to the air. She slumped with relief when she saw Mama and the physician running down the hill. When they reached her, she rolled awkwardly aside, her wet skirts twisting around her legs so Mama could hold George's face instead. A few men who had been in the churchyard were hurrying to their aid, gathering around the place where George lay on the grass. Margaret rose to her feet, glancing down at her torn dress. Mama's face was twisted with panic.
"Where are James and Philip?"
"At home."
"Go look after them."
Margaret nodded, head spinning. She stole one more look at George before making her way back to their cottage. She stopped outside the door, wrenching off her boots. They made a suctioning sound as she managed to free her feet from the mud and sharp rocks. She poured the water out onto the grass and left them outside to wash later.
"Philip! James!"
She opened the door and caught sight of her two brothers sitting on the sofa, brows drawn together with concern.
"James told him to do it,"
Philip said, pointing a finger at his older brother. James's lip quivered, his straight blonde hair hanging over his ears. Margaret sighed.
"That doesn't matter. George still chose to climb that tree, even though Mama has told all of you not to do that. Perhaps if I had not shouted his name, he wouldn't have lost his balance."
Margaret's stomach pinched with guilt. Was it her fault? Sudden tears sprang to her eyes, but she blinked them away before her brothers could see.
"He will be all right. The doctor is treating him now."
She gulped, taking a seat on the sofa beside them, momentarily forgetting how wet her dress was. It was a serious injury, one that would take months to heal, if it could even heal properly. She squeezed her eyes shut. How could they afford the constant attention of a physician, not only for Papa, but now for George as well? A surgeon would also be necessary, she imagined, given the state of his leg. Her stomach lurched again as the image of his bone came back to her mind. Her hands shook.
Poor George. At least he would live. It could have been much worse.
After a few minutes, the door opened and the physician carried George through the doorway. Mama, Papa, and two of Papa's friends followed. Mama walked ahead, leading the physician to the room that George shared with James and Philip. The first time George screamed, Margaret took her two brothers by the hand and led them outside. Her heart hammered, stomach twisting. She tried her best to keep the boys entertained, but there was a heaviness in the air that suffocated them all. Eventually, they all sat on the grass in silence, waiting for someone to come out of the house. After what must have been an hour, the door opened and Mama walked out. The corners of her mouth were turned downward, a deep furrow between her eyes. Margaret stood, leaving her brothers at their place on the grass. She still hadn't changed out of her wet dress, but the warmth of the day had dried much of it, leaving behind streaks of dirt and grime from the filthy water on both the fabric and her skin. Margaret wrapped her arms around Mama's frail shoulders, pulling her into a hug.
"He will be all right," she whispered.
Mama pulled back, nodding as a tear rolled down her cheek.
"I cannot bear to see him suffer."
Margaret nodded, fighting the lump in her throat. From over Mama's shoulder, Margaret saw the surgeon walk out, a grim look on his face. Margaret squeezed Mama's arm, gesturing in the man's direction. Papa followed behind him. His gait was staggered from the stress of the day. He needed to be resting, but he joined the physician by Mama's side.
"The damage to his bone is significant," the surgeon said. I'm afraid it is beyond my expertise to repair properly. There is a specialist in London by the name of Dr. Jonathan Gulliver, who has treated similar injuries before. I will refer you to him."
He glanced at the house, with its various states of disrepair, before returning his gaze forward. His throat bobbed with a swallow.
"I'm afraid he does ask a lofty price for his services. It is not necessary for the boy's survival, but he is likely not to walk properly again without the experienced care that Dr. Gulliver can provide."
Margaret's heart sank and a lump gathered in her throat. She tried to breathe in, but the air was too thick. How could they ever afford it? They already struggled to afford Papa's physician. And if it came to a choice between obtaining care for George or Papa, Margaret knew in her bones that Papa would choose George. She couldn't lose her father, and she couldn't bear to see her energetic brother never walk or run properly again. There was no way to win. They had never needed money more than they did now. Margaret felt a keen responsibility to find work with good pay, or their family would continue to suffer. She tried to stay positive, but her hopes were fading. Was all of this misfortune because she hadn't listened in church that day? She cast a quick repentant prayer heavenward before walking back to where James and Philip still sat on the grass. Philip's pale brows were drawn together, eyes brimming with tears. Margaret pulled him into her arms, resting her chin atop his ginger curls.
"Hush, all will be well. George will be all right."
She hoped it wasn't a lie, or she would have to repent again.
Chapter 2.
"Shouldn't you be on your wedding trip by now?"
Peter Trafford, Earl of Blackwell, had never known his voice to croak more than it did with that statement. He cleared his throat, meeting the gaze of Matthew Northcott, as he stood above where Peter lay on his,
as the doctor had so graciously called it, deathbed. Even more surprising than the state of his own voice was the fact that Mr. Northcote had called upon him at all. The two were not friends, not in the slightest. They were acquaintances. Even that might have been too generous. Peter was fairly certain Mr. Northcote considered him much closer to an enemy than anything else. "My wedding is next week," Mr. Northcote said. He stood tall, his dark hair and black jacket nearly blending him into the surroundings of the dimly lit room. "Before I leave, I wanted to ask you one last time to make matters right with the Lovell family." Of course, that was what Mr. Northcote was here for. He never ceased to guilt him over the matter. Peter groaned, rolling to one side.
"What makes you assume that I will change my mind from the last time we spoke?"
"You are dying." Mr. Northcote's voice was flat, his jaw tight. "Everyone in town knows it. I had hoped you might be wishing to right a few of your wrongs for fear of purgatory." Peter raised his eyebrows, shocked by the man's bluntness. He coughed into his blanket, scrunching his brow against the pain in his chest.
"If you think I have achieved so much in my life by fearing anything, you are mistaken."
"How does it benefit you to leave the Lovells with nothing?" Mr. Northcote gave an exasperated sigh. "I know you are selfish, but you cannot access your funds if you are no longer living. So what purpose could you possibly have in depriving the Lovells of the smallest sum?" He stepped closer, blue eyes flashing with anger. "You are the reason they have fallen so far in society. You are the reason they can hardly afford to live day to day. You and I have never known what that feels like, but I invite you to imagine it and see if you do not feel the slightest bit of fear." Peter's stomach dropped, but he ignored the sensation. In truth, he had been wrestling with something unusual over the last several weeks. Guilt. It had wrapped itself around his chest like a rope, growing tighter each day. He had thought of his life, and what he possibly had to be proud of, and as he raked through all the memories of 27 years, he had come up with nothing. Nothing. He shook himself of his momentary weakness and met Mr. Northcote's gaze.
"If you are so concerned with the Lovells, why do you not offer them some of your own fortune?"
"They will not accept it." Mr. Northcote let out a slow breath. "I have tried. The last time I spoke with them, they were quite resistant to the idea of charity." Peter scoffed, the sound turning into a cough. He composed himself, shaking his head against his pillow.
"Then they most certainly will not accept any charity from me."
Mr. Northcote folded his arms across his chest. "Perhaps they will not view it as charity, but as you simply returning the money that is rightfully theirs." Peter wiped the sweat from his brow, tightening his jaw against a wave of pain in his head.
"Will money truly solve all their problems? You know as well as I that reputation means far more. What is done cannot be undone. They will never be accepted in society again, no matter how much money they have. As for my fortune, there is not much I can give to the Lovells without leaving my mother and siblings without sufficient to live on comfortably."
His brow furrowed.
"They are my priority. Everything I have done was for them."
"Confess to your false accusations, then. You ought to die soon anyway."
Blast! Why did the man have to keep reminding him of that fact?
Mr. Northcott continued, eyes blazing with restrained anger. "Confess that you accused Mr. Lovell falsely of cheating in cards in order to stop him from being cred-"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?